Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast. I'm your host, Joe, my brother, and me. Shoddy.
Hello.
Hello, Joe. What's up?
I feel like it was yesterday that we were in the studio here talking.
Yeah.
And it's been a week. This week has flown by way too fast.
Yes. So fast.
Oh, my God.
Every day. I don't even feel like you eat, breathe, or have a moment to do anything. That's how summer is. It just goes so fast. So I'm mad at Zach Bagans right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You want to know why?
No. But tell me.
I'm going to tell you and the listeners. I'm mad at him right now. Every time I'm on Twitter, he answers everybody's questions. If I send him a Twitter message, he never responds.
Yeah.
I'm breaking up with him.
Oh, is that what it is?
So I asked a question, a couple of weeks ago. Didn't get a response.
Okay.
I sent another one last week, and it was a good question. He didn't respond. But he responds dumb stuff. Like, hey, Zach, I'm so... I'm like, I have a serious paranormal question.
I noticed that, too, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. The paranormal and ghost adventure page.
Yeah.
I post real stuff on there and nobody responds, but people post a picture of a window and they all like, what do you see in this window? And there's like 1,000 responses. Just, and then another thing that I post on there is, tell me your most interesting ghost hunt you've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever responds because I don't think they've ever been
maybe
on.
Maybe they haven't left their living rooms.
That's what I'm thinking.
Since 1984.
Yeah.
But here's my question.
Okay.
It's a thought-provoking question. And it's a serious question. I wasn't being facetious with this. If you have a spirit attachment, does your body weigh more? Like, do you physically weigh more if you have an attachment? Because something is entering your spirit, right?
Yeah.
And they say, like, the soul has weight.
Yeah, that we actually talked about that on one of their shows where the doc, there was a doctor that did a study on 3,000 people, and he actually found a weight difference when the people died.
Yeah, so, like, if you have a spirit attachment or 2 or 3 or 17, why would you, yeah.
Maybe that's why I can't lose any weight.
I think that's my problem, too, why I'm chunky, spunky, cute, and short. But anyway, so I'm mad at him, and we're in a fight.
Jeez. I did see, I was working on the website, and I went into our images.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw your picture with Aaron.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
He was fun. He was a really nice person. Very funny, which is
I should post that on the Facebook page for the ghost adventure thing, and a million people will comment on it. But
yeah, right.
I ask, what's your favorite piece of equipment? And they'll all be like, the TV.
Anyways, so that was that's my beef of the week.
Oh, beef of the week. Is that a new segment?
I guess so. I just made that up.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, okay, so.
So I was sitting in the living room.
Mm-hmm. Doing what?
Watching YouTube on my new TV.
Fancy.
Yeah, my giant TV.
Schmanchy.
And all of a sudden I hear the front door rattling. I'm like, who's at the front door now? I walk to the door. There's nobody there. I look down, there's a squirrel staring up at me. They're knocking on my door now, Jen.
We need to get ears over here to communicate with them.
Yeah. So. What do you want? Do you want?
Donuts.
Donuts and cheese.
Yeah.
Which reminded me of a news story I heard.
Oh, I want to hear it.
You know how we love squirrel stories.
Yes, we do.
Human flesh-craving squirrels are attacking MTA workers? I don't know what MTA workers are.
Like Massachusetts Transit Authority or something like that. You know,
okay,
Transit Authority workers.
Earlier this month, a squirrel in the Bronx bit an MTA worker in her finger, sending her to the hospital. Now it appears the squirrels have developed a taste for the salty, delectable people's flesh. A second MTA worker has been attacked by a squirrel, this time in the train of a Coney Island-bound Q train. It is unclear whether the same squirrel has committed It is unclear whether the same squirrel has come back for a second taste of human flesh, or if the city's squirrel population has teamed up with the coyotes to rid the city of all non-littering humans.
Zombie squirrels. Zombie attack squirrel. New York.
Attack squirrels.
That'll be the next sci-fi movie.
It's almost like a lady that trained them. What city was that in? Was
Detroit.
Oh, Detroit. Okay, so she wasn't in New York. It's not some rogue squirrels.
Well,
from her.
She could have moved.
Yeah.
She could have got the heck out of Dodge.
And a train employee pissed her off.
Yeah, really. Maybe that was her boyfriend.
But I'm like, I'm sitting in the living room. I hear their door rattling. So I'm prepared.
What?
I got my stickers ready in case it was somebody from a church.
Nice.
And it was a squirrel begging for food.
Maybe he's hungry.
Yeah.
Maybe he wants some french fries. Don't deny the fry. All right.
So what are we doing today?
Besides random thoughts.
Yeah.
Squirrel stories. The whole show's just squirrel stories. No, I'm kidding. So I know you saw an article. There's been some recent activity in and around the Illinois area, preferably Chicago.
Yeah.
Of fighting the Thunderbird.
They've been Thunderbird.
Oh, man. It's going down a rabbit hole real quick here, Joe.
No, they've
sighting
had
Thunderbirds.
Thunderbirds and Mothmen. A lot of, I mean, recently, there's been. Like in, I know we mentioned this on the show before again, mm-hmm. We're repeating yourself, but on May 5th in 2017 in Calumet Park, Illinois, mm-hmm. law enforcement officer and his son witnessed by others in the park a flying humanoid about 6 feet in height and witnesses estimate.
We're doing good today, folks.
Yeah, oh,
just
man.
Bear with us.
Witnesses say that it was blackish gray in color. And had a wingspan of 8 to 10 feet.
Wow.
And, you know, that's just not the only one. I mean, there's been so many lately mm-hmm. in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes me wonder what disaster is about to happen in Chicago because...
Yeah, doesn't the Mothman appear before disaster?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, they had a Mothman sighting and the bridge collapsed.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's why they have their festival every year, right?
Yeah.
Point
Pleasant Mothman Festival.
It's coming up, though.
2017, September 16th and 17th. And I got the website right in front of me. So
well, you know, you might see us walking around
there. I want to go down there.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have a vendor booth because they're all sold out, but...
Yeah.
Let's go down there and check it out, see what it's like.
Yeah,
we'll It'd be nice to actually play
222 Paranormal Podcast tag. Like if you see us, you have
there
to
you
tag
go.
Us.
Tag me.
Okay, so listen to this. This is interesting. You know, since we've recorded history, there's always been sightings of this Thunderbird.
Yeah.
So in Native American legends, the bird bears like a similarity to like the vulture or mm-hmm. the condor, an eagle, giant eagle, not the grocery store, but but you know, since they've had what was it like cave drawings, created their art, you've seen this legendary bird in all of their. What do you call it?
In their folklore. I mean, it's always on the top of the totem poles.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a lot of their drawings, a lot of their myth, like we said. Mm-hmm. And this is just like everything else. It's cross-culturally.
Well, it's interesting because in the research, we show that the different tribes from different parts of North America mm-hmm. have this creature. So, you know, we're talking like, our area, the Midwest, the Plains area, the Pacific Northeast,
mm-hmm.
which I just thought was fascinating because apparently, and you know, I've in our research found that in different countries, they've also had reported sightings.
Yeah.
But just, you know, going back to like the legend of the Thunderbird in the Native American, it was the Winnebago Indians of the Northern Midwest and Plains states, I'm going to mess this up.
Here we go. Apologize
in advance. The Passamaquoddy.
Passamaquoddy.
Yeah. Indians of the Northeast. So Northeast would be
North.
Like New York, that I know. I'm struggling today.
Maine.
Okay, so up that way.
Yeah.
All right. And then the Kuala Ute Indians of the Pacific Northwest.
Kuala Ute.
So they would, they believed that the Thunderbird could assume human form as a bird man.
Okay.
And to the this tribe, the Thunderbird was a man who could change himself into a giant bird with supernatural powers, and he had ties to the divine underworld.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting. Some of them describe it as having a wingspan twice the size of a canoe.
Yeah, two canoes were width.
Yeah.
But the thing is, how long was a canoe? 10 feet? 20 feet?
Probably. Yeah. I would think at least 10 feet. Mm-hmm. You know, the table we're sitting at is what, 8 foot long? Or six foot?
6 footer.
Oh my gosh. So double that. That's huge.
That'd be all over there.
Over there by your fence. And then they were also saying that the legendary Thunderbird, its wingspan was reported to be between 15 and 20 feet.
Yeah. Okay. And so that's like we were just saying, maybe two canoes are probably 10 feet.
So what's that bird you looked up, Joe? The largest
living one right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the Andrine condor.
Mm-hmm.
It weighs 26 pounds and has 11 foot wingspan. That's the biggest living bird right now.
Okay. But it's interesting because the research we did, it kind of broke off into three segments. So it's Thunderbirds, which are just like giant eagle vulture type birds. Then they have the Mothman sighting. But then they also have these, you know, prehistoric like pterodactyl type birds.
There's been a lot of, like in 1977, there was a hunter and he was out with his friends walking a trail. And they heard the screeching of an animal and looked up, and there was a bird that flew over that looked more like a pterodactyl than a regular bird.
Yeah. And interesting, because there was one photograph that we found with a bunch of people standing in front of a pterodactyl type bird.
Yeah, there's a lot of them from the 1800s.
Right. So,
but the one where you see the bird, it's looks like 1960s hunters.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody forgot to Photoshop out the deer feet. If you look at the guy's feet, you can see the deer feet right under where the ropes are.
But interesting, like, you know, truly, in the 1800s, we could have still had some type of pterodactyl bird. It could have went extinct.
You know,
they could have been hunted to the point of extinction.
You look in the, like, online, you see a picture of a guy standing in front of a giant, looks like crow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the how do we say it? Teraton? Is that how you?
Yeah, Teraton. Mm-hmm.
You know, that went extinct, a million years ago or so, they say. And that picture there is a guy in a museum standing in front of a replica.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but a lot of people are saying that it's the original, a real photo. But the reason I bring that up is, you know, we mentioned before the show about, you know, a lot of these people think that a lot of these birds are extinct, a lot of things, but they found a coelacanth, a live coelacanth, which has supposedly been extinct for a million years.
Yeah, so you just don't know. And so I was thinking too, like, okay, so if there is places in the United States or anywhere in the world that have either not been discovered or people just don't go to because it's just so remote.
Yeah.
Who's to say there isn't stuff out there? I mean, they're finding new species all the time.
Yeah. And look at our trip to New York, driving through the hills of New York.
Oh, my gosh.
There could be animals in there like Bigfoot that we don't even...
Sure.
People have not been in those places for 100 years.
Still densely wooded.
Yeah.
You know, and then like, you know, you go out west and people say, oh, you go out west. It's huge. Mm-hmm. There's probably places that nobody's ever been to because... I mean, just when we flew over it, the vast, vast deserts and, you know, that was, I love that. So sightings have been reported in Australia, Mexico, Norway, and the majority of them are from Pennsylvania, which is interesting.
That is interesting, you know, and that's what Reverend Swoop said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he had he's, if people don't know, he's called the paranormal pastor. And we had talked to him at one, at
the MUFON show. Yeah.
And he wrote an article about his experience in Erie, Pennsylvania of seeing one of these. He was a grave digger, I think it was.
Yeah, he was a grave digger at one time.
So in the, in 2000s, he saw one, one night he was at the cemetery.
Cemetery.
My brain is not working today. I don't know what's going on. And usually we do pretty good in the morning. But anyway, so he was working as a grave digger at this graveyard in Erie and had seen something. He said it was humongous. It had wingspan that like went way out.
You're paraphrasing?
I'm trying. Okay, so I'll just read you his account.
Okay.
Okay, so this is his account. It was one of those days in July of 2001, as he mowed 23 acres of lawn between the mausoleum and the edge of the property, dominated by some high tension wires, he saw something very odd. Obviously frightened by the sound of the mower, the gigantic bird launched out of the brush 25 yards to my right. If it wasn't so large, I might not have noticed it. The gigantic wings began to beat the air with dynamic effort, and the avian was aloft and soaring over the brushes past the sprawling high tension wires and the pillar that supported them. The bird was absolutely humongous as it passed the support tower. He said he noticed the wingspan had reached the crest and it ran very close to the length of the tower supporting the beams. He said the creature rose quickly and then glided down past the treetops of the area where they had dumped excess dirt from digging the graves, and then it was out of sight. I'm like, that's crazy. Do you remember when I came home, when I had this experience? I came home one night, I got out of my car in my driveway, and I saw like this white, I thought it was a plastic bag. You know how the wind takes a plastic bag and it flights around? And all of a sudden I felt this like flapping of wings, but I didn't see anything and I didn't hear anything. It was a snowy owl was sitting on my back porch, you know, the sun porch part. It was silent.
Yeah, they are.
Owls are completely silent. And it scared me. And I went, and I ducked and I covered my head. It was huge. I mean, huge. It was like, I don't know, maybe 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
Owls are big.
Oh, yeah, they're big.
But they're light. Their bodies are super, super lightweight.
Yeah, I know.
So anyways, just interesting that here in the Midwest, we would come up with something like that.
The sightings, I mean, we're talking, you know, ancient times with the Indians and how the Indians would say that their drawings in that. I looked at the cave drawings and I think the Indians were seeing a Mothman because everything resembles the Mothman. And that's why we kind of wanted to put it together today with the Thunderbirds. Well, is for one, you know, the recent sightings of the Mothman in Chicago. And also just when I've been doing some research, everything accounts, they said that the bird would fly straight up, and then there was accounts of the Mothman that would fly straight up,
which a normal bird wouldn't do that. It would launch itself and then flap its wings, which is very interesting. But here's something. In the Plains Indians, the Thunderbird was also known to the Algonquin speaking peoples of New England. However, the Native American culture in New England, little was known about their beliefs, but they regard the Thunderbird as a fearsome creature, resembled the wingman or an immense bird. It caused fear and dread and was said to actually kill and eat humans from time to time. So, you know, you see videos or stories of, you know, eagles or something snatching people's pets out of their yard.
Yeah,
or, you know, there was one report in, where did I see that? Somewhere of a little boy getting snatched.
Yeah,
in 1970 something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was said that the 10-year-old boy was out playing. I believe his weight, does this sound right? Like 30 pounds for a 10-year-old, does that sound right?
No.
Okay. But anyways, it said that there was a 10-year-old boy out playing in his backyard, and a bird came down, snatched him up, and carried him 15 feet before it dropped him. Now, there is a video online of a little boy getting snatched up by an eagle, but that's been proven fake. Oh. That was a college filmmaker actually made that video for his final project for his classes. So that was definitely fake. And you'll see that online. It's a picture of an eagle flying around. And then it comes down and snatches the boy. And they all run over and the boy's crying.
Oh, gosh.
So that has been definitely debunked.
Well, one of the things that we read about was that the Mothman and the Thunderbird have equally been described as having like a shuffling effect when they walk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was reading here that they're saying that there's a startling visual resemblance between Mothman and Thunderbirds.
Okay.
And the artifacts that are created. But the difference is the head. So the Thunderbird is reported to have one, but the Mothman is said not to have one, which is, I don't know, interesting. But both of them have been described with glowing red eyes.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you said that, you know, non-head, but I think that the Mothman's shape just makes it look like he doesn't have a head.
Yeah, because they were saying it has like a head shaped like the Ace of Spades.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because, okay, so the main difference between Mothman descriptions and Thunderbird artifacts is that the artifacts with the Thunderbirds have a head, but the Mothman is typically described as having no head. Generally, the body shape, other than the head discrepancy, is identical. So they also have described as having the eyes kind of in the upper chest.
Yeah, and that's what's weird because, you know, both of them say they're glowing red eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that the Mothman's shape attributes that to being that it has no head. It's just more bulky,
and
it just makes it appear that it doesn't have a head.
There's one account of a bird that used to exist in North America called the Tetrahymenorhis maricae mommy. It was said to be 5 foot tall and had a 24-foot wingspan. According to Dr. Kenneth Campbell, it was unlike the condor, a predator bird. It had a long, narrow beak of the predator type, but rather than like the bent one that we saw that, you know, can rip the flesh. So he goes on to say that some of the bones were as recent as 8,000 years ago have been found in conjunction with human habitat sites. So were the early Americans like killing off these, you know, type creatures? You know, it's definitely, look at like tigers. There's only like 3,800 tigers left in the wild. Mm-hmm. Who's to say it, you know, in the 1800s, these pterodactyl type birds did exist, but you know what other food sources out in that area,
and
you know
that would make a lot of sense because a lot of the Indian or Native American that would make sense because a lot of the history shows like cave drawings and that, like we said, and they're not going to sit there and draw cave drawings and stuff like that of legends,
right,
per se. I mean, they not really did in a way, but they're gonna show people what they saw.
Yeah.
So it's possible that they did exist back then and they just did kill them off.
Yeah. You know, who's to say that they only hunted the male species or the female species and there was nothing else to, you know, continue the line. So it's just crazy to think that it couldn't be a possibility. So here's one account that came from a native. It says, my father's grandmother was one of the last Tamaroa Indians who were all natives of central Illinois along the Mississippi River and its tributaries. According to them, they battled the giant eagles for generations, and when the last known one to them was finally killed, they found hundreds of human skulls in its lair. It was not a condor or vulture, but it was a perfect replica of the familiar golden eagle, but like three times larger. It said, despite the size, they were strong flyers and also strong walkers, and they preferred to travel short distances afoot, walking almost erect like human with folded wings behind them.
See that right there, an example of what we just talked about. I mean, everything makes sense on that because they actually saw it. It describes like the Mothman walking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so who's to say that there isn't still?
And they said that they killed the last one.
Mm-hmm.
But why would you kill again, it? Well, to them, though, it was
fearful
and battling them because obviously it took humans because they found all the skulls.
Interesting. So, you know, like, who's to say when children go missing that it,
yeah,
you know, you just don't know. It could be
killer squirrels.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there was an account in Kent, England in 1963, which is interesting because this is not North America, you know, it's over in England. But they said four teenagers saw a black figure shuffling towards them. It was the size of a human. It didn't seem to have any head, but it had huge wings on its back like a bat. So like probably folded up.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And then there was one in Sweden in 1946. This is during the Ghost Rocket episode, which I don't know what that is. The Swedes were also reporting huge winged creatures without heads.
See, and that all goes back to the Mothman sightings.
Yeah. So interesting. But, you know, in Chicago, do you think maybe possibly it could be like those base jumpers who just have those bat wing suits?
I never thought of that. But then again,
you'd see them though. People, you know, they post videos. Or something.
You know, too, because they're all colorful and
yeah.
I mean, you can tell the difference between a base jumper and a bird.
Yeah, true. But I just thought, you know, there's always that possibility.
Yeah.
People get things mixed up when you're seeing something, you know, 1,000 feet up.
Yeah, that's true. But you would definitely be able to tell a base jumper from a bird. Mm-hmm. All right. So going back to the Native American legends. Their description of the Thunderbird, and the reason they call it a Thunderbird, is because the actual thunderstorms, okay? They thought that the flapping of the wings caused the winds, and the thunder sounds of its flapping wings. The rain was just the water that it sheared off its back, and the lightning was actually the light coming from its eyes. So there again, the legend says that the eyes glowed red. And you look at the drawings, I mean, you can see them everywhere, the cave drawings, and they always had the shape of an X.
Yeah, you were showing me that one.
Yeah, they always had the shape of an X, and that was the same shape that the drawing of the Mothman, that there's a drawing out there, it's the copper-colored drawing, and that drawing is actually composed from thousands of witnesses' testimonials.
Okay, so they like and put it all together?
Yeah, they put them all, and it's clearly an X shape. It's the same shape that you see in the cave drawings. So I'm thinking that the Thunderbird of Native American lore is actually a Mothman.
So do you think that, you know, even if it is a possibility that somewhere out west, and there's, you know, there's lots of like caves and cliffs and mountains out there. Do you think it's a possibility with that wingspan that it could, say, venture? I mean, just fly across.
Easily.
United States.
Yeah.
I mean, birds migrate, right?
Yeah.
So who's to say that they, you know, like, for example, when there's no food source, animals will go where the food source is. You know, like lions, they'll go, 50 miles a day? So who's to say that, you know, maybe there's scarcity in the food source where they're at and they're moving, you know, more towards the lakes, rivers.
Exactly.
You know.
You know, and eagles and everything, they don't really fly by flapping their wings. They glide on the currents of air.
Yeah.
And you get a bird that is this big with a 20-foot wingspan, it can go up high enough to where it can catch the jet stream and fly thousands of miles.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about this, but birds do go down to Florida for the winter.
True. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that, okay, so we're a very busy society. We have our eyes and our heads and our phone all the time. You know what I mean? How often do you really look up at the sky and just watch the skies? Like the other day I was driving and I was just looking at the skies and the clouds and it just went on forever and ever. And I'm like, you know what? In my mind, I'm thinking to myself, I never just take the time just to watch the skies. I'm like, just think the things that we're missing by not paying attention, being so involved in our lives.
And, you know, we've evolved to where we can't see as good as we used to.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, back caveman and all those days, or even early Americans, their eyesight was a lot better because you had to use your eyesight to hunt.
Yeah.
You had to use, and you could see longer distances. Nowadays, our focal lengths are not that long because we're always looking at things close up.
Yeah.
We don't have to hunt for food. I mean, the hunting of the food is going to Walmart.
Yeah.
You know?
True.
So you could see things in the sky and not even realize how close they are or that, you know, you see a bird flying in the air and it's like the blue heron. This thing is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an 8-foot wingspan. It's flying up high enough. People think that those are thunderbirds because they're so big, but yeah. They're really only half the distance up that you think they are because there's no point of reference to see how big a bird really is. A good example of that is Reverend Swoop's description, because he had a great point of reference with the towers,
mm-hmm.
with the electric towers, yeah. And he said that the wingspan was the distance of the tower.
That's crazy. That's scary. Yeah. There's a lot that comes out of Erie, Pennsylvania.
That is so bizarre. You know, Pennsylvania and, well, Ohio too, but yeah. Pennsylvania is a huge cryptid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all kinds of cryptid sightings, whether it be Bigfoot or thunderbirds.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely something to, you know, maybe take some time and go down and look for some of these mm-hmm. things, like when we were looking for that orphanage place and we couldn't find it.
Yeah. Gore Orphanage.
Yeah. It's crazy. So there's a famous cryptozoologist named Ken Gerhart. Now, I think you and I
met him.
And, yeah. And
he was at the Dogman Symposium.
Yes. That's where I could not remember. I knew we had ran into him. But he was saying that, you know, his part of his career has been studying prehistoric birds. So he says, this is, I'm quoting from him, "What's interesting is the reports of these giant raptor-like birds continue into modern times. We seem to have a large concentration of them here in the Southwest, particularly in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, as well as in New Mexico and parts of Arizona." He also said that in comparison, a 20-foot wingspan would be truly a monster and something undocumented by science. And he believes one of his buddies, a guy named Dave Zander, had seen a surviving teratorn, is that how you say it?
Yeah, teratorn. That's the one with the picture of, you know, the guy in the museum.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So
it almost looks like a crow.
Okay. He said, according to the legend, thunderbirds, you know, like we said, had wingspans large, like two canoes lengths. He said it's definitely a real animal. According to the native peoples that lived here, it's not necessarily a legend.
It all goes back to the same thing we say over and over, where there could be species in the woods that people never see. You know, these birds are known to walk, not long distances, but they do walk.
I hope I never encounter one, because I'm only like 4'10".
Yeah.
I'll be getting eaten and carried away.
Yeah.
Like, wah, wah, and I'm like, nah.
But yeah, by walking, lots of times too, you know, they say they only walk short distances, but how do they know?
Well, bears walk on their feet. They get up on 2 feet yeah. and walk. So,
but
sometimes
this bird could only have to fly when it's feeding, and it could go a long time without eating food. So the amount of time that it spends in the air may contribute to the fact that we don't see them that much.
Yeah, that's true. But they would have to have an immense amount of, you know, food to to sustain that, you know, energy to fly with those giant wings.
100-pound bird takes a lot of food.
Chicken wing.
I mean, the
we got chicken wing, Joe. Chicken wing.
The Andean condor, I think I'm saying that right.
Mm-hmm.
That weighed 26 pounds, you know. I mean, and that was 11-foot wingspan. So you're talking something that's 20-foot wingspan could weigh twice or even three times that much.
Yeah.
And the amount of food it would need to consume. But then again,
yeah, you have alligators that don't eat for a year.
That's what I was just gonna say.
Sorry, I stole your thunderbird.
It's funny, we thought the same thing.
Thunderstruck. I don't know why that came in my head.
I know you have some witness accounts there.
Yes,
in your notes in front of you.
Here's one description of an encounter by Stan Gordon. Now, this was in October that he posted this, but it was in June of 2001.
Okay,
so this is a quote. A resident of the town of Greensville, Pennsylvania, reported seeing a large bird the size of a small airplane from his living room. Greensville is a small town that lies near the border of Ohio, about half the distance between Erie and Pittsburgh.
Once again, that's
Erie. So the witness, Ray, that's not his actual name.
You sure?
This car revving in the background. If you guys hear that, it's not paranormal. It's not Thunderbird. Well, it might be. Or Cadillac. So anyways, okay. Serious. The witness, Ray, upon further inquiry during a phone interview on June 15th, 2001, was able to flesh out the report. Ray described the bird as fully feathered, a dark brown or black color. The back of the wings were a grayish black. The body had not been very bulky, and the overall appearance was not like any bird he had ever seen. The house lies near Little Shenandoah Stream, and the house overlooks a small pond and woodlands. Ray was extremely familiar with the birds and other wildlife in the areas, including bald eagles, vultures, and storks. Ray stated that the bird flew in from the south at a distance of 200 to 300 yards from the window and landed on a large tree beside the small pond. As it flew in, he saw a shadow first and thought it was an ultralight aircraft that are used in the area sometimes by the neighbors. The bird landed and remained on the tree for 15 to 20 minutes, then took off again to the south. Ray estimated that the wingspan was the equivalent of some ultralights that he had seen in the area, around 15 feet and upwards of 5 feet in the body size. So do you think that could have been like the same creature that Robin Swope had seen?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's almost the same area, yeah.
Yeah, so interesting.
And that was in 2001?
Yeah.
What year was Reverend Swoop's?
2001.
Oh, okay.
Same year.
It could be the same bird.
Could be. Very, very cool. And, you know, it's so densely forested.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to, you know, even, oh, you know what? It's interesting, and this is something totally unrelated rabbit hole. I don't know why it just popped in my head. I just read something on Facebook where there was a guy in downtown Erie, you know, where we had that convention?
Yeah.
Some
Bayfront Convention Center.
Yeah, some girl was, or lady, I don't know if it was a girl or lady, was in the water. She jumped in the water to commit suicide, and this guy jumped in there and saved her life.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know, just paranormal, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, all that, that's the UFO landing right in that area.
Yeah.
The Erie Vampire Crypt. Now reports of Thunderbird
sightings,
Bigfoot sightings in that area. Is that a vortex? Is this maybe the aliens are dumping these creatures in this particular?
Everything in Erie.
I know. Like, you know, is it just a testing ground for these different types of cryptids?
Well, it's tough to say because you see that all over, but
yeah,
the Pennsylvania area definitely has a lot more activity than a lot of the country.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's lime, built on limestone.
Yeah.
It's near the water.
Mm-hmm.
There's quartz there, too. I mean, all the way from, like, Ohio through Pennsylvania. Yeah. Who's to say? It's something very interesting.
Very eerie.
So, I know I mentioned earlier about the boy that got picked up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Dragged. I've got the, like, account here. So, okay. Just I'll give you the brief rundown of this.
Okay.
So, in 1977, on July 25th, in Lawndale, Illinois, there that 10-year-old boy was playing outside his house with two other kids. So they had a number of witnesses, it said. He said this bird came and grabbed him by the tank top, pulled him into the air, carrying him some distance before the mother managed to grab him and pull him back to the ground. The witnesses attested to seeing the bird, describing it as giant black birds with hooked beaks, with bodies big as man's and white ring-coated things around their neck. So they said the wingspan could have been 15 to 20 feet in length. Martin Lowe, for years, has maintained the encounter did occur. However, many zoologists are regarding the tale as fabricated with the Andean condor. So basically, you know, they're not believing his report, but who's to say these birds didn't escape from a zoo or something?
Well, That's how it always is, though.
Yeah.
You always have these experts come on that say, yeah, it's impossible. It's impossible. You know, but that's the paranormal aspect of it.
Right.
Is you have all these accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned before, as we do all the time, but cross-culturally, these people don't talk to each other and make up these stories.
Right.
The videos I've seen, you know, or reading the things, trying to learn more about this, they always have an expert come on. And the expert always says how it's impossible and all, you know, but that's just their opinion.
Right. It's one person's opinion.
Exactly. And they bring on these experts to make it sound like that's the truth and nothing but the truth, you know. So it's all opinionative. When we talk about Mothman mm-hmm. and Bigfoot or anything, it's all opinionative. So, you know, who knows?
It's what you choose to believe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's just too many accounts of the same things happening over and over, whether it be Bigfoot, Mothman, UFO, Thunderbird, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
And, you know, okay, so let's put it this way. You know, they bring in their experts, but we physically talk to Reverend Swoop about his encounters, and mm-hmm. he can tell you right to your face, looking you in the eye without blinking, that he saw this stuff.
Yeah.
And I would believe him because he's a world traveler. He knows.
And what makes an expert?
Exactly.
What makes somebody an expert? Mm-hmm. Just because you have a degree in something doesn't mean you're an expert.
And you're studying stuff that, you know, okay, I don't want to sound like a theorist here, but you're reading stuff out of books that other people have wrote. That's how you're learning this stuff.
Right.
You know, it goes back to the coelacanth. We said before, the coelacanth became extinct millions of years ago, and then they found live ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're blue, by the way. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah, they're bright blue.
Interesting. Did not know that.
So anyways.
Oh, my gosh. We made it through the show, Joe.
This was a tough show because it's so early in the morning. I came here last night. I got the studio already.
Mm-hmm.
Made sure that the AC was on. So it's not 90 degrees in here. But one thing I did last night is I did a small video, and I'll put it out here. I'm going to edit the show before I edit the video. So okay. I had a few people asking about our equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to start doing some product reviews. And it sort of sounded like a commercial, but that's really the only way I know how to do it. So I did a video of the cell sensor EMF detector. Okay. It's one of the tools that we use. If you guys look it up, it's called the cell sensor. It's really inexpensive. It's $27.95.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was one of the first pieces of equipment that we started mm-hmm. using because, you know, one, because of the cost. You know, you can get some expensive yeah. stuff, but definitely I thought it was helpful in using it. I liked external.
Well, the external antenna.
Yeah.
And in the video I mentioned about how it's, at first I thought, what the hell is this thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's an antenna. Why would we want it? But it makes it so sensitive.
Yeah.
And this thing works great. You can use them. We have several of them, and we use them as like REM pods.
Yeah.
Because they flash and make a lot of noise. You can put them in a spot and use them as REM pods because they're so inexpensive. They're only $27.95. And what I did was I went up on our website, and I put a link to them on our website. And we're now affiliates of Amazon. So you can go on our website, click on it, buy it through Amazon, and we get a tiny little percentage of the sale. Yeah.
Every penny, it does. You know, helps. It goes towards, you know, our cost and
our bandwidth
and running our website. But if you haven't been to our website yet, we do have a website, not just a Facebook page.
Yeah.
We have an actual website. It's www.222paranormal.com. Go over, check it out. We have some photos on there. You can shop for ghost hunting equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we post some of our shows, like our live events that we're
going
to.
Yeah, live events. I'm working on the website. It's a slow process for me, and it's getting better.
Yeah,
but a lot of our information is on there.
Yep.
Another thing that we're doing also is a call-in show.
This is going to be exciting. This is something new that we're trying, and Joe's set up a number. Can you give him the number, Joe?
Yeah. Number is 740-720-0225. It's a Google number. I will not answer it. Just call in. Leave a question. In a few weeks, we're going to do a question and answer type show
mm-hmm.
where we're going to play your message on the air. Now, if you do not want to be on the air, just say, hey, don't put me on the air. And we'll just read the message.
Yeah, we won't put your voice on, but we'll definitely, you know, if you have some paranormal question or want to know something, you know, about our experiences, or if you have a really good personal experience or ghost story or some any type of encounter, whether it be a Thunderbird or a Bigfoot or a cryptid or, you know, Chupacabra. Let us hear it.
Yeah.
Leave us a message.
A few other things. We're going to be at Michigan Paracon in Sault Ste. Marie, August 24th through 26th. So if you're up in the UP and you want to say hi, come over to our booth, say hi to us, sit down, get on.
We'll
record your story.
Love to hear from you guys.
And I know there's a lot of Bigfoot stories up there, so you guys tell us your Bigfoot stories.
Yeah, definitely. We have to check out St. Ignace where they have that. Right on the water in St. Ignace, there's this like a gift shop.
Yeah.
And they had a big carving or cutout of Bigfoot out front.
Yeah. So it was closed when we were there last time.
Yeah, well, it was winter. Yeah. But I'm excited to go up in summer. Yeah. Be able to go around. We'll be able to see that haunted cemetery that's up there.
Yep.
That we talked about on our Haunted Mackinac show. Let's see, what else is... Oh, I want to give a shout out to somebody. Oh, this is so exciting. So we got a really, really sweet and endearing message from one of our fans. Her name is Holly, and she's a new listener to the show.
I don't want to say fan. She's one of the friends.
She's a friend.
It's a friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Sorry. So anyways, hi, Holly. Thanks for listening in. We really appreciate it, and keep listening.
And she is from Toledo, so now that we know that, it is a must. She has to go to Paranormal Toledo number 2 at the Collingwood Arts Center in September.
Yeah, so that's exciting. That's coming up. And then we also have Glass City Paracon in
October.
So Joe and I are going to be very busy this fall. We have a lot of shows lined up, live events. Want you to come out, come see us, come talk to us. Come buy some stickers and merchandise.
Dowsing rods,
which are really cool. And another great tool for investigation if you're just starting out. But anyways, make sure you check out our website, www.222paranormal.com. Check us out on Facebook. Give us a like, a wink, a shake, whatever. And, anything else, Joey?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week. And don't forget to call in and share your paranormal stories with us.
Yep.
Bye, Joe.
Goodbye.